Hi, I'm Erwin McManus, and this is the Mosaic Podcast. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And if you're one of our regular listeners, we love the fact that you journey with us, and we pray that every single message inspires you and helps you become the person that God created you to be. Every single week, we send a new message across the world, and everything we do here at Mosaic is made available to everyone in the world for absolutely free. The reason we can do that is that we have incredible people who give generously and sacrificially to make this possible. And I want to invite you to join us. If you're already a giver, thank you so much. If this is something you've not yet done, I want to invite you to start doing that now. Go to mosaic.org/give and give a one-time gift, or even beyond that, become a recurring giver here at Mosaic. And if you're one of those individuals who God has blessed in an amazing way financially, I want to invite you to become one of our partners here at Mosaic. What's really beautiful about Mosaic is that our biggest givers are families who do not live here in Los Angeles, but they are so committed to the message of Jesus going to the world that they support the work here from Los Angeles to the ends of the earth. And so I want to invite you again, go to mosaic.org/give, become a part of our support system, become one of our partners. And more than anything else, I want you to listen to the message, allow Jesus to speak to you in a way that will change your life. About a month ago or so, my team got me addicted to TikTok. I had never seen TikTok, never wanted TikTok. It's the cousin of Instagram. I'm not really sure why they both exist, but they do. But I saw this meme, and I don't know if you've seen it, but when I saw it, I just felt really defiant. It said, "How many times a day, as a man, do you think of the Roman Empire?" And the moment I saw that, I thought, nah. You can't do that to me. You're not going to make me start thinking about the Roman Empire just because you asked the question, "How many times a day do you think about the Roman Empire?" So I answered out loud, "Never." But it wasn't true. Because I realized that before I ever saw that meme, before I ever knew there was this thing about how many times a day do you think about the Roman Empire, I was taking Kim, my wife, out, and we were in her car, and her car had no gas, which is pretty much always. And so I said, "My car doesn't have gas, but it's electric. There's a reason, but her car requires gas." And so I usually know when she asks me to go with her in her car, it said it's empty. And so we go get gas, and of course that means I get gas, and she's sitting in the passenger side fulfilling her royal duties. And while I'm getting gas, this is a few months ago, this is before I ever saw this question about the Roman Empire, and I'm standing there pumping gas, and I hear these four words out of nowhere. I can't remember reading them, thinking about them for years, if not decades. Out of the blue, I hear this: "I appeal to Caesar." I have no idea why that came crashing into my head. "I appeal to Caesar." And if you know that phrase, you know you can actually find it in the Bible in a very, very obscure spot. And so the car is receiving its gas, and I leave it, and I walk around, and I tap on Kim's window. I'm not sure why I felt a need to do this, but I tapped on her window, and I said, "I know what my next talk is going to be about." And she goes, "Well, what's that?" "I appeal to Caesar." She looked at me like I was out of my mind. "What will that talk be about?" And I had no idea. I just knew that that statement had somehow grabbed me, and I had to then start digging in to figure out why this declaration is so important. And then it all came together in such a clear way that so much of my life right now is intersecting around this kind of declaration: "I appeal to Caesar." Because without being aware of it, that's what I do almost every day of my life. And it creates a great deal of confusion for people, because people in a public medium know me as a person who appeals to Jesus. And so I talk about Jesus, and I shamelessly am a passionate follower of Jesus. Anyone who knows me for more than 5 minutes knows that my life is defined by who Jesus is. But I actually appeal to Caesar a lot, and that creates a huge amount of confusion with people who follow me thinking I need to be consistent. It's either Jesus or it's Caesar. But the person who said this is a guy named Paul, whose name used to be Saul. Now, I know it's not much of a name change. You just replace the S with a P. But it was a radical transformation in his life because Saul was a Hebrew. He was a Jew who hated Christians. He hated this cult, this sect that believed that Jesus was God. There was this insurrection of people who believed that Jesus was actually the Messiah, had been crucified, buried, raised from the dead, and he was committed to stopping them. So he was literally an assassin going after Christians and making sure they were either imprisoned or killed. And then he's traveling down a road in Damascus, in Syria, a street I've walked down. And on that street in Damascus, Paul has a vision. He has an encounter with Jesus on the Damascus Road. And Paul, in this conversation, hears that he's persecuting Jesus. And he goes, "Who are you?" And Jesus says, "I am Jesus," because, Paul, you don't seem to get it. I want to be very clear about who I am and what you're doing. And then Paul's blinded. And I'm convinced he's blinded because everyone who believed in Jesus was terrified of Paul. And they actually had to go to Paul to lay hands on him so he could see again, so they could actually embrace him and receive him now as a part of this movement of Jesus. Now, the reason I'm going there is that Paul was now this passionate follower of Jesus, but that wasn't everything he was. He wasn't just a Hebrew, he was a Roman. He wasn't just someone who carried the blood of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He also carried the power and weight of the Roman Empire. And so in this moment in Paul's life, in Acts chapter 25, he's in a critical moment. He's been arrested. And now the very people that once were with him were now against him. And once the people who were with him to stop this movement of Jesus are now trying to stop him. And this group of religious leaders called the Sanhedrin were trying to arrest him and kill him, create a mock trial to find him guilty and then to execute him. And so this is what happens in verses 10 through 12. Paul answered, "I am now standing before Caesar's court, where I ought to be tried. I have not done anything wrong to the Jews, as you yourselves know very well. If, however, I am guilty of doing anything deserving death, I do not refuse to die. But if the charges brought against me by these Jews are not true, no one has a right to hand me over to them. I appeal to Caesar." After Festus had conferred with his council, he declared, "You have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you will go." See, there was a series of, in a sense, mock trials. At first it was a Sanhedrin, and then a leader named Felix, and then a leader named Festus, and a king named Agrippa, and then eventually it would be a Caesar in Rome that Paul would have to stand in front of and fight for his freedom or his opportunity to share his intention and purpose in life. And in fact, later on in Acts 26, verse 32, Agrippa says to Festus, "This man could have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar." So in this moment, when Paul appeals to Caesar, it must have been so confusing to everyone who was with him. It seems like the last thing he should do. It seemed like Paul had lost his trust in Jesus and now suddenly was putting his confidence in Caesar. Have you ever been around people and you can't understand why they're doing what they're doing? Or have you ever made some choices and you were so sure they lined up with your intention, but other people began questioning your motives? I know exactly what that feels like. And in fact, one of the interesting dynamics of this is that we live in a time right now where even people who believe in Jesus will actually try to limit the impact you can have through the light that God's called you to, because they will expect you to live in a certain way, to act a certain way, to speak a certain way. And if you don't, they feel that you violated the way. By the way, that's why I brought this book up with me. So I wrote Mind Shift, and it came out of a series of interesting interactions. My publishers are Penguin Random House, and I have imprint called Convergent, and they did my last book, and it didn't go as well as we had hoped. And the last book was all about Jesus. It was called The Genius of Jesus. So you couldn't be confused about my belief system or what I was committed to. It was The Genius of Jesus. But for some strange reason, people who did not believe in Jesus didn't think his genius was relevant to them. And people who did believe in Jesus didn't think you should call Jesus a genius, because that's a downgrade from God. And so it was an interesting conversational space. So I went to New York. I met with the president of the publishing house. It's my last book. And I said, for years, I've been wanting to write a book the way I talk to people. And you just don't seem to want to do that. So it's my last book. So I'm either going to do it the next book or this last one. It's up to you. I said, okay, do it with us. What will it look like? It's a social psychology book. See, when I talk to people about God, I don't use the Bible. I'm not quoting the King James. I'm not using Bible verses. And I'm not trying to create a very religious environment. I'm just talking to them, one human to another human being. In fact, sometimes we're talking about life issues, like overthinking, how to deal with anxiety, how to overcome depression. Sometimes we're just dealing with life issues, like how do you develop a culture in your company where everyone develops and grows. Sometimes you're just dealing with real life issues, and if you help people solve those problems, they become so much open to even deeper spiritual conversations. And on top of that, bookstores have sections. You've noticed that, right? Have you been to a bookstore? And in those bookstores, they tell you not just what kind of book it is, but who should buy it. And I would always tell them, every time you put my books in the Christian section, you're telling the whole world, only Christians should read this book. I don't want to write books for just people who believe. I want to write books for people who are trying to make sense of life, who are struggling with meaning, who feel overwhelmed by the pressure of everyday existence. I want to write to people who are depressed and hopeless and searching and questioning. I want to write to atheists and agnostics. But if you put it in that section, they'll never buy it. And so this book is a social psychology book. And I have two people in my life who really, really are concerned that I'm never misunderstood. My wife, Kim, and my daughter, Mariah. I don't think Aaron cares if I'm misunderstood, but I think that Kim and Mariah really care deeply that I'm not misunderstood. And Mariah said, Dad, you need to explain to people that this book is different because they'll be confused. And there have been a few times Kim and I have had conversations and she goes, but you still believe in Jesus, right? So I don't know, I even confused my wife. And I go, yes, I still believe in Jesus. I just don't know if I believe in the way we do all the things we do because we say we believe in Jesus. So I had to deal with, well, what do I do with the confusion? So, well, I'm going to read one section of my book. It's a dedication. Now, I have to tell you, I've written around 12 books. I have never dedicated a single book to Jesus. That just always sounds so cheesy to me. I dedicate my book to Jesus. I'm like, no, I dedicate my life to Jesus. I write books. But with this book, because it's not a book for people who already believe and because it's based on my 40 years of research and experience through social psychology, I dedicated the book to Jesus so that there would be no misunderstanding that I still believe in Jesus, even though you don't have to believe in Jesus to read this book and have your life changed. So I'm going to read it to you ahead of time. You get this part for free. To Jesus, who created in me a mind shift that transformed my life from the inside out. You changed my heart, changed my mind, and changed my life. Now, one of the things that really began to frustrate me is that whenever I would be in an environment outside of Sunday, whenever I would be in an entrepreneurial space or a business space or an educational space or a space like TED or Renaissance or PopTech, that so many of the people there who were the best thinkers in the world were normally people who did not believe in God. They didn't have any real informing faith in their life. And so they had a perception that people who did believe in God just couldn't think at that level. And in fact, there are people who try to compliment me by saying, I can't believe you believe in God. People that are as intelligent, you don't believe in God. I said, no, there are a lot of people more intelligent than me that believe in God. You just haven't met them. You've just been drowning in dumb people who believe in God. And so you actually think that you think at a higher level, because you do not believe in God. You see, Paul was brilliant. He was educated. He was privileged. He was empowered. He was a Roman. And he leveraged his life to accomplish what no one else could do. And that's what I want to talk to you about just for a few minutes, about leverage. How to leverage your life for its greatest impact. And I think so oftentimes we are informed by an environment that makes us less rather than calls us to more. What happened when Paul said, "I appeal to Caesar"? In that moment, what Paul decided to do was to make the secular the sacred. It would have made more sense for Paul to spend his whole life in the synagogue, because he was a Jew, so he could always go to the synagogue and talk to the Jews about the Messiah. I mean, that's the best space. Everyone's sort of ready. They already believe in the scriptures, all the Bible that exists. They already believe in the story of the Messiah coming. They're waiting expectantly for someone to come. If it's not Jesus, it's someone. So they're almost there. So Paul could have spent his life in the synagogues talking to people about the Messiah, about Jesus. And even if they responded negatively, at least they were on the same page. He could open up the book of Isaiah. He could open up Deuteronomy. He could open up the Proverbs. He could open up Genesis and say, let's look at the scriptures together. And then there was a whole group of other people called God-fearers. They were people who wanted to be Jews, who were not Jews, but they were so open because they were searching for God. Paul could have just spent his whole life with the God-fearers, the people who were open to God and wished they could be Jews. They wished they could be in the synagogue. They wished they were allowed in the temple, but they were not. But Paul had to keep going to the other end of the spectrum. He had to keep finding the person who was furthest from believing. He had to go to places like Mars Hill, a hill named after the god of war. In the city of Athens, named after the goddess of sensuality. And in the middle of that, Paul was always pressing to the spaces where no one else would be heard but him. He did not look for the sacred spaces. He looked for the most secular spaces, and he transformed them into sacred environments by his presence. One of the things that just frustrates me about, and I'm just going to say this about Christianity in this modern world, is that we are so soft. We're just soft. We're so bold when we come together. When we do this thing called church, we are the bravest people in the world. We're singing all these awesome songs and making all these incredible declarations. Like, your faith is just so awesome when you're in here. But when you leave, it just dissipates. It just disappears. You go back to work and you look just like anyone else who wasn't here. And then it becomes so important that, well, that the church does it right because you're not doing it all. And one of the interesting dynamics in life is that God didn't bring you here so that you would have a place you could be spiritual, a place where you could have a sacred experience. God brought you here so that you could not have any experience except a sacred experience. One of the frustrations of having a Tesla is that when it dies, it dies. And the battery, it just drops and it lies. It says 89 miles and 32. Like, what happened to the other 50? Don't care. And then it redirects you to a charging station, and I lose time. The one thing I do like about a gas-powered vehicle is I can fill it with gas in a matter of minutes. When my Tesla runs out of battery, it costs me an hour or 2 hours, and that's at a supercharger. If I use my charger, it's 2 days. I cannot go far. I can get coffee, that's about it. And then on top of that, it will send me little notices. You need to reduce your battery because your battery memory is going to lose its ability to be charged. So what happens is that if you charge your battery and you don't drain it, it loses its memory. It doesn't know how much energy, how much power it actually can carry. And I go, well, that's the explanation for most people I know that believe in God. They come to church, they come and they worship, they listen to the message, They are filled with inspiration and faith, and then they go and they don't do anything with it. And so they can't understand why their capacity for faith is so small. Because your internal soul battery doesn't know how much you're capable of because you never use what you receive. So we have to be careful. And I get this question all the time from people going, how come you don't use any language like other people who believe in God do? I said, first of all, I don't trust it. It feels disingenuous to me. It feels inauthentic. In fact, when someone has a spiritualized answer for every question, I don't trust that person anymore. Because when you go, well, how'd you make your marriage work? We just pray. They're lying to you. Marriages don't work because you pray. Praying helps. But communication helps a lot more. And there sometimes we try to over-spiritualize things. Go, oh, he's the best shooting guard in the world, speaking of staff, because he believes in Jesus. No, he believes in Jesus just like the guy who can't shoot. He took on certain disciplines and structures that allowed him to become the best in the world, and he believes in Jesus. And I think sometimes we try to make it magic. If you believe in Jesus, you're supposed to be awesome. You can believe in Jesus and be a disaster. And we have a lot of evidence of that. Even when you believe in Jesus, you have to decide to take everything that's, quote, secular and make it sacred. So you need to take stewardship over every area of your life. You need to become smarter. You can become smarter. You're not stuck. I do not believe that you're fixed in your intelligence. But your intelligence increases when you decide to learn. Your intelligence increases when you decide to be humble. Your intelligence increases when you become curious. You need to become smarter. Jesus doesn't compensate for being stupid. You need to become more disciplined. You can love God, and if you're undisciplined, you will never break through. But no one tells us that. We just like, no, just believe. And God will sprinkle fairy dust over your life. And you can still show up for work late. And you can still not hit the deadline. And you can still not get the project done. But because you believe in God, it's going to be okay. And then you wonder why people do not believe in God because of the way you're living your life. Paul, when he says, I appeal to Caesar, he's actually integrating that he believes in Jesus and that his world and Caesar are not separate. They're connected together, and you are most powerful when you appeal to Jesus and to Caesar in your life. Come on. You do not need permission to be in the world. I have a friend who was at the house yesterday. I love him, but he also brings me awesome stuff. Yesterday, he brought me some original Daredevils. He knows I love Daredevil, the man without fear. And so many times he'll bring me graphic novels and he'll bring me some of his work, and he's written on everything. I think it's like Batman, Superman, X-Men, everything. But he works on really dark stuff sometimes too. Sometimes, all the time. And right now he's writing Dracula's origin story. And he was giving me the backstory, and I was getting goosebumps. That is how Dracula would come. He goes, yeah, Dracula needed an authentic backstory, origin story. And then, of course, he's worked on Frankenstein, too. And pretty much every dark creature he's written on. And he actually said, yeah, I remember when I used to have to justify writing in this genre. He never had to justify writing in that genre to people who do not believe in God. He had to always justify what he did to people who did believe in God. And you know what's crazy? When someone says, you shouldn't be doing that, what you really mean is, you shouldn't be doing that. Maybe I should be doing that. You do not need permission from anyone else to live the life God has created you to live. And by the way, if you're waiting for permission, you're probably never going to walk on that path. Because not only do you need to make the secular the sacred, but you need to commit to your path. Paul says, I appeal to Caesar. What he's saying is, I'm going to Rome and nothing and no one's going to stop me, not even my weaker self. What Paul did is he set every other option on fire, no plan B for his life, burned every bridge that could lead him to a lesser way. See, most of you aren't making the hard decisions between like evil and good. You didn't wake up this morning going, do I go to Mosaic or do I rob a bank? Which one? It's like, okay, today I'll go to Mosaic. Tomorrow, the bank. But today, you probably are not making decisions between extreme good and extreme evil. Your choices are more around average and extraordinary, not good and evil. And the crazy thing is when you finally choose your path, you'll have fewer and fewer people who accept your path. You have people in your life right now who like you the way you are, especially if you're average. Am I allowed to say that? No, I'm not saying you're average. I'm just saying you might be average. Not because you have average talent or average intelligence or average opportunity, but because you're comfortable with average. And so you shouldn't be offended because you chose it. And if you choose average, you shouldn't be upset if someone says, oh, you're very average. You should say, yes, it's a choice I've made. Because people ask me, well, who do you coach? Because I coach certain people one-on-one. I said, I like coaching people who have zero margin of error. See, average has massive margin of error. If you're shooting for average, you're going to hit it. You can make so many mistakes and still be average. You don't have to get up tomorrow early and still be average. You can quit your job and still be average. You can do bad work and still be average. I mean, when average is your target, you're going to nail it. Because you have almost an endless margin of error. But you see, if you decide to move from average to good, that margin of error is going to reduce. And if you make the decision to go from good to great, your margin of error is going to reduce. And if you decide to move from great to extraordinary to unique, if you decide to pursue your personal genius and greatness, your margin of error will reduce to almost zero. And I love working with people like that because they don't have many people in their lives. You get so many friends when you're average because average people love average people. Have you ever had friends and then you decided to upgrade not your friends, but your life? And all of a sudden they didn't like you anymore? They'll always come up to you and go, wow, you've really changed. See, what they actually mean is, wow, you've really grown. But I don't want to say you've grown because that means I didn't grow. So I want to say you've changed so that I don't want to indict myself because I haven't changed. I had this phone call years ago with someone I really admire, and they said to me, wow, you've really changed. But they didn't say it as a compliment. They said it as an insult. Wow, you've really changed. And I felt offended. Tone can really offend. I wanted to say, no, I haven't. But I knew I had. So I gave it a few days to process. And I called them back and I said, you're right. I've really changed. I am different at 35 than I was at 25. Thank God. And I'm going to be different at 40 and 35 and 45 than I am at 40 and 50 than I was at 45. In fact, I'm going to keep changing. I'm going to keep growing. In fact, if you haven't changed, you should just curl up in a fetal position in a corner and start to weep. Because if someone sees you 10 years from now and says to you, wow, you're exactly the way I remember you, you should have a panic attack in that moment. Because the last thing you want to be is the same person you used to be. Come on. But you have to commit to your path. You have to commit to your path and realize not everyone's going to go with you. All I need you to remember is one thing. Wyoming. That's it. If you need more help, South Dakota. Idaho. North Dakota. Those are all the states where people were going to California and gave up. Now, I love potatoes. I'm for Idaho. I love Cheyenne. I love every one of you who happens to be listening, who has the technology to hear this. I love you. But your ancestors were not struggling to get to Sioux Falls. They were not fighting to get to Cheyenne. They were not killing themselves and losing relatives on the hard trail to get to Des Moines. They were all going to Oregon or to California. They were going until the Pacific Ocean told them they couldn't go any further. But people dropped off on the trail. There's a reason why they call the people in Portland the Trailblazers, because they went as far as you could go. And in your life, if you want to keep all your friends, give up on your future. Give up on your goals. I know this is such a hard thing to hear, but hear me out. You're going to have people who will fight for you to never change. You're going to have people who will call you out and say you're not loyal if you decide to grow. And you have to decide how you're going to pick the people that journey with you. If you're an alcoholic, you know this. You have to give up your drinking buddies. If you're an alcoholic and you decide to go dry, to be straight, you have to give up your drinking buddies, because your drinking buddies are drinking buddies. And when you stop drinking, they stop being buddies. And you get this. You understand that if you're going to change your pattern, you have to get around sober buddies. You have to get around people who now have the values and the patterns and the disciplines that you want to have in your life. We get that with drinking buddies, but we don't get that from underachieving buddies. The great danger, even here in this epicenter of human creativity, is that you will surround yourself with underachieving buddies. That you'll surround yourself with people who decide, you know, it's enough to survive. It's enough to pay the bills. It's enough to make it through the day. It's enough just to exist. It's enough. And then one day you may wake up realizing you just burned all of these days and weeks and months and years of your life, and you're done. I can't do this anymore. And you're going to get up and you're going to make the changes that elevate you to a different level. And you're going to think your friends are going to cheer you on, but they're not. And you're going to have to decide, do you keep traveling across the prairie? Do you keep wandering across the desert? Do you fight across those mountains to get to the final destination of your life? Paul is going to Rome and nothing is stopping him. And very few will ever go with him. They couldn't understand his life. And here's the beautiful thing. No one needs to understand your life. You just need to know your calling. It's your path and no one else's. So it's been a crazy few weeks. I'm just going to make it very personal right now. Because this is my first talk with you guys after turning 65. It's crazy, crazy. And I can't believe I'm 65. People are like, are you retiring? You'll know I'm retired when I'm dead. You'll go, oh, yeah, he's retiring soon because he's dead. And but one of the crazy things about the different stages and phases in your life is that you hopefully will give yourself more permission and more permission just to be you. Because I can tell you, in my 20s, and a lot of this was actually related to my faith, I lived so much of my 20s and 30s out of obligation to other people. I did. And it was sincere. I was authentic and I was sincere in this. But other people told me what my life should be like, what it should look like. And now that I believe in Jesus, now that I follow Jesus, this is what I should do. And so I did it. But I always felt something inside of me that I was giving up the truest expression of who I am as a human being. But I was willing to sacrifice that if this is really what life is about. And someone asked me, when did I feel like I had my greatest breakthrough? It's when I decided to stop living a life of obligation and live a life of intention. And I made that shift, but I've had to make it over and over again. Obligation keeps pulling me back. How about you? And what other people think of me pulls me. I can't help it. I know I'm not supposed to listen to what people say on social media, but I do. It's, don't listen to the DMs, but I do. Don't pay attention to the comments, but I do. And it seems like the more influence you have, the more criticism you have, it's endless, right? So I get this DM from this person. And they just come at me so hard. They said, I've noticed on your Instagram, you don't talk enough about Jesus. I'm like, I talk about Jesus all the time. But not every clip is going to be about Jesus, because I'm not just talking to people who believe in Jesus. I'm talking to humans. So I'd like to talk about human things. And she goes, and then her closing was, make your life count. Went, ooh, yeah, can you feel it? Like, oh, man. It's like she punched the oxygen out of my soul. She was telling me, Irwin, your life doesn't count because you're not living it the way I think you should live it. I know I'm supposed to ignore it. That's what I would tell you. I can coach you, but I'm not a good listener. So to me, and so I went on her Instagram. I know you're not supposed to do that, but I did. And I realized, oh, she's from Australia. And I was hoping she was like evil. She was awesome. It just made me so mad. Like, she has this incredible family. Her husband looked like the perfect human being. Their children were beautiful. All the photographs were like warm. I'm like, I like them. They would love my wife. And I wanted to hate her, but I couldn't, because she was lovely. And then I did notice on all of her Instagram that she never talked about Jesus, which I thought was interesting. And and I know I'm not supposed to do this, but I checked who she follows. I know I shouldn't do that, but I did. And I noticed she follows all these great Christian teachers. So I thought, well, she has a lot of people teaching her. So even if I'm not meeting her standards, she has plenty of people. And then on there, she follows a lot of my friends who don't believe in Jesus in the business world. So I know you shouldn't do this, but I DM'd her. And I sent her a little thoughtful response. No, and I said, you seem like an incredibly lovely person. And I was sincere in that. Which made it harder, because sincere people can actually lead you the wrong way. Good people can actually hurt you and damage your intention. And so I said to her, you know, I talk about Jesus a lot, but I don't talk about Jesus all the time, because I'm interested in so many things in life. Jesus is the informer of my life, but I love science, I love physics, I love sports. Oh, I love sports. You know, I love culture, I love leadership, I love business, I love entrepreneurship. So I'm going to talk about all those things. I love helping people have mental structures for success. I love all these arenas. And that's the problem with so much of Christianity, is that it wants to limit you and tell you there's only one way to reflect God well. And so I told her, I said, I noticed you follow a lot of really good Christian speakers, and I just encourage you to learn from them. And I said, but I do notice you follow some of my friends who don't believe in God, like Mel Robbins and Tony Robbins and Alex Hormozi and Grant Cardone. So you're following atheists to Scientologists. Did you send them the same DM? She didn't answer that question. But I said, it seems to me that you're following Christians for, quote, your spiritual health, and then you follow people who are not Christians for how to live your life every day, how to solve the big issues of your life and even in your business world. And this is a frustration for me. I go, isn't it better if those of us who actually love Jesus and are called by him and have an intention set by him, if we invade every arena in life and become the very best in the world? And here's the beautiful thing. Come on. And here's the beautiful thing. You have a life that God wants you to live that no one else is supposed to live, and no one else needs to understand it. And so I want to challenge you to begin to leverage your life, to step back and go, I appeal to Caesar, to decide that you're going to be the sacred in the secular. You don't need to be in safe, sacred spaces. It's important to be here. It's important to make this a part of your life, but this cannot be your life. This should be the fuel of your life. Now go live it. Then you need to choose your path and decide, what is your calling? What is the one thing that no one else perhaps is created to do but you. Only Paul was going to be able to get in front of Caesar and talk to Caesar about Jesus. There's so much good to be done. The gospel needed to go to Asia. It needed to go to Europe. And there were thousands upon thousands of people who needed the hope and love that only Jesus brings that Paul would now never be able to bring because he's in prison for the rest of his life. Paul said no to almost every good thing so he could say yes to that one thing that only Paul was entrusted with. I don't want you to take on a generic calling. I want you to take on yours. But if you need the applause and affirmation of people, you'll stop in your Wyoming and never get to your California. And for some of you, your California is Wyoming. That is your Rome. You have to eliminate the options. You can't be a settler. You have to become a pioneer. You have to decide you're going to go all the way through, no matter what it costs you, no matter what it takes. And when Paul said, I appeal to Caesar, what he basically said is, I am choosing the end of my story to end in death so that I can live the one life I'm created to live. Paul gave up the right to exist for the right to live. And then this week, I get to do these. I have these business relationships. And so one of the guys that I actually coach is an immigrant whose company I think is like at $50 million. And he comes to our mastermind. And in our first time together, one of our guys, David Arcos, instead of watching the soccer match that I paid for them to experience, leads him to a personal relationship with Jesus. And so when he's coming to the business event in 2 weeks, he's going to be baptized here on Sunday. Kind of a beautiful thing. And then his partner, a business partner, I also coach him separately, and he hasn't been open to God. And so we haven't been talking about God, just talking about business and life and culture and mindsets and mental structures. And then after our call Thursday, our time was up, and he goes, hey, I know our time's up, but you have just another minute. I said, sure. And he goes, you know, I've been thinking about like the divine energy, you know, the universe, God. And you know how they say that when the student is ready, the teacher will come? I said, yes. So I grabbed a Bible and I start to try to look for Jesus in there to see what he might have to say. Because I think that I'm the student who's ready. I said, are you asking me to take some time on a Zoom call and help you understand who Jesus is and come to know him? He goes, that would be wonderful. I said, okay, that can't be a business call. That's just going to be me and you on a human call. He goes, that'd be great. Then in between those, I end up with another call with a guy that one of our community people here, Edwin Ariave, owns a company called Skyline. And a year ago, he said, hey, would you come in and help me develop a leadership culture in our company? So we developed this amazing leadership culture. And one of the guys says, hey, can we Zoom? And I have a conversation, you know, maybe about coaching or something. And so we finally get on the call this week, and he said, hey, I was on a private plane with all my friends. He's like 30 years old. I think he's like 34 or something like that. He goes, we're all flying around, partying, and I realized all I know about them is they party, and I think all they know about me is that I party. And this past year, he had a good year. He made $5.2 million. Not bad. Even the 0.2 would be great, right? You know, and he said, but I realized I don't want to be them. And then he talked about Edwin, who owns the company. He said, I knew Edwin before. I don't want to be who Edwin used to be. He goes, I want to become who Edwin is now. And he says the most beautiful thing. He said, I noticed that Edwin and Ed Milette and you all have like this faith center. I want to be like that. I said, well, if you want to be like that, we all have one thing in common, and that's Jesus. So can we talk about Jesus? And he goes, that'd be amazing. So we spent that hour on the Zoom call talking about who Jesus is. And since he's a great salesman, I had to close the deal. I said, hey, is there any reason right now that you can think of that you would not trust Jesus with your life? And he said, I can't think of one. I said, so would you right now want to just cross that line of faith and open your life and give your life to Jesus? He said, yes, I would. And right there on that business call, he prays and he gives his life to Jesus. While at the same time, I'm getting DMs from some guy going, what the H are you doing with your life? You've lost your way. And it really struck me, and this is why I want to have this conversation with you.
every time I have followed God to the edge, the people in the center didn't like where I was going. I started this community so that you would be fearless as you follow Jesus, so that you would live a life that other people would not understand, so that you would know you have permission to be unique, to be courageous, to be creative. And that's how God created you. And so I was standing at a gas station and I heard it. I appeal to Caesar. And I'm 65 and I'm just starting my life now. See, this next phase of my life, I'm gonna appeal to Caesar. I'm gonna leverage everything I have, everything I've learned, everything I know, everything I've become, to pry open every door that everyone thinks cannot be opened, because I know God wants to be in that room, and he gets in the room with me and you. And I want that for you. I want you to be the intersection of the sacred and the secular. I want you to be the person who appeals to Caesar and people cannot figure you out. I want you to be the person who does what you do so great, so extraordinary, with so much brilliance and creativity and genius that people come up to you and go, "What in God's name got into you?" And you can say, "You're exactly right. It's that God got into me. And I cannot help but elevate to the highest level." And by the way, if you're here and you've never understood why Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead, if you've heard this phrase that Jesus died for your sins, sometimes that phrase comes across as if all he did is died so you don't have to have shame or guilt. He understands that your sin weighs you down and limits your God-given capacity. Your sin is an anchor around your neck and it holds you captive through guilt and shame. And when you entrust your life to Jesus, when you give your life to Jesus, God breaks the weight of those anchors and sets you free to live the life that you can only live in him. The reason you should give your life to Jesus is you're sick of average and you're sick of the status quo and you're done with ordinary and you're ready to elevate to where only God can take you. So this is what I want you to do. I normally have you bow your heads and close your eyes, but I'm not gonna do that today. If you're here, and maybe you've never crossed the line of faith, you've never invited Jesus into your life, maybe you never understood how it all comes together, but you're here and you know that you need God. You know that you need Jesus. You're done with the excuses. You're just ready to trust God with your future. What I want to invite you to do right now is the most difficult thing that you may ever do. And even if there's just one of you, I want to give you this opportunity to do something radical, something courageous, something with no turning back. If you're here and you say, "Today I give my life to Jesus. I want this extraordinary life that only Jesus can give me. I want his forgiveness and his freedom." If in this moment you would say, "Erwin, right now I cross the line of faith. I just want you to stand up right now and I'm gonna pray for you." If you're here and this is your moment, beautiful. I love that. I love that. Beautiful. Anyone else right now? Remain standing. Remain standing. This is your moment. If this is your moment, no turning back. This is your turning point. This is where you cross the line of faith. This is where you put your life in the hands of Jesus. This is the moment everything changes. Beautiful. Remain standing. I want to pray for you right now. Beautiful. Father, I thank you so much for every person that had the courage to stand in this moment. God, I thank you first for that one guy who stood up first. I cannot even imagine how much courage that took and how that domino affected other people, because we are not separate beings. We are interconnected. And God, I pray for each person that stood and had the courage and faith to stand, to trust Jesus with their life. I pray right now, God, they would just whisper in their own hearts, "Jesus, I give you my life." And even as they give their life to you, God, just wrap them up in your love. Let them know they belong to you. And I pray, God, that you, from this day forward, would do something so extraordinary in their life that it would change them forever, that they would know that you're real. And I pray, Father, in Jesus' name, amen. Can we just thank God for them? Remain standing just for a moment. Hey, guys. This is what I want to do for you. If you stood up, I want you to go to the back area where, does it say next step? Yellow wall. If you'll give them your name and address, I'll make sure you get a free copy of my book, Mindshift. I just want to give it to you, okay, as you begin. We love you so, so much. You guys be seated for a moment. Pastor Joe, would you come? I love you guys. I want to thank you so much for joining us today on the Mosaic Podcast. As God has spoken into your life, one of the things that Jesus teaches us is that when we've been invested in, we need to also become investors. And I want to encourage you right now, if Mosaic is one of the platforms from which you grow spiritually, you connect more deeply to God, and your faith with Jesus becomes more real, I want to encourage you right now to go to mosaic.org and become one of our givers. Give a one-time gift, become a recurring giver, become a part of what God's doing across the world. Mosaic isn't just a church in Los Angeles. Mosaic is all of us working together.